He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
Daniel Strauss, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, I know you are the true definition of the Renaissance man of strength, but since this is a steel bending podcast, why don't you try to take me back to the first time you remember seeing someone bend this piece of steel?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I was like big into steel bending maybe 5 years ago. Was sort of the peak for me. I don't know how I got into it. I was sort of interested in grip for many years, and I think I was just sort of researching. If you're interested in grip in the UK, David Horn is a resource that I was looking at a lot, and I think I was on the grip board back in the day as well. And I just occasionally would see steel bending, nail bending, stuff like that, just see it pop up, and I never really thought too much about it. And then I remember one day I decided I'm gonna give it a go. So I think I ordered the wraps from David Horn. I think I just got wraps, and I went to like a DIY store in the UK and bought some 6-inch nails. And I remember I like came back, I was in the kitchen, I ripped this packet open, wrapped it up, and was just like grunted and like didn't know any of the technique, didn't know anything, was like squeezing it as hard as I could from all these different angles. And finally I felt this thing move just a little bit, and that was it. From there, I was addicted to it. And yeah, like we were saying just beforehand, the feeling of making that, taking an implement that is not designed to move and moving it through your power is an invigorating feeling. So after that, I kind of jumped into it and started looking for goals in steel bending and set my mind on bending the Iron Mind Red Nail.
Nice. And about how long did it take you till you completed that?
I don't know how long it took me. I'd say maybe a year to a year and a half. We're juggling the grappling competitions. You know, training would vary a lot. So I'd get focused. I'd get caught up in focusing on doing some grappling tournaments, and I wouldn't be bending a lot. And then I'd have a little bit of time off, and I'd get back into it. But I got like an Iron Mind bag of nails, and that's like when I really could put work in, because there were so many nails that I could train almost every day. And I think such a big part of nail bending, especially since I haven't done it as much short steel bending, unbraced, because I haven't done it for so long, the conditioning of your hands, like the pain tolerance of getting the nail in your hands, it takes a while to develop that, and you really got to put a lot of work into it. So I was bending, I'd say like 5 days a week, just part of my workout. At the end of the workout, I'd bend, be that Iron Mind nails or nails that I found or pieces of steel that I'd cut up myself. Yeah. And sort of just grease the groove with it until I felt that bending for me was second nature. And then I can't even remember when it was, but maybe four and a half, five years ago. So it's probably longer when I started. About 5 years ago, I did the certification and got the red nail done. So that was cool.
Nice. You know, it's kind of wild as I kind of talk to more guys involved with this and research more about it. It's sort of like in jiu-jitsu, right? There's going to be a lot of jiu-jitsu parallels in this conversation.
Oh, yeah. Jiu-jitsu parallels for everything.
I hope
I'm, like, cooking, I'm cooking dinner. I'm thinking there's parallels here.
I hope the strict benders aren't bored by this by now, but they know. the fact that the red nail, when you talk about elite benders, that's sort of like just the barrier to entry. And I don't know like what belt we could put that on, but maybe like a purple belt or something like that. But because that thing's hard, but man, then there's a whole world beyond that too. It's these guys are doing some crazy stuff.
What belt are you, Cody?
I'm brown belt.
Okay, so you know kind of when you get your black belt, you'll know as well. When you get your black belt, you've only just begun as well.
And, yeah, I was going to say that, but I can't really speak on it yet.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. I'll tell you an interesting thing. So talking about the belts, I'll re-parallel that back because I've thought the same thing as you. And I left in October. I stopped doing it, but for 4 and a bit years, I was running a no-gi program, like at the gym that I teach at. And I had my own grading system for no-gi. So it was based on, we'd wear ankle bands, like wristbands that go around the ankle. And I didn't want to use the same number of grades. So 5 in jiu-jitsu, white, blue, purple, brown, black. I didn't want to use 5. So it was either going to be 4 or 6. And I settled on 4. And I didn't want to use the same colors.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to have someone who was a purple belt walk into my class and say, give me a purple band. Yeah. So what I decided on doing in the end is I used the Iron Mind color scheme as my belt system. So I missed out blue because obviously blue is already in the jiu-jitsu spectrum.
Yeah.
So it was white, yellow, green, and red were the 4 grades that I had.
All right. That's so awesome.
I use like a similar grading system inspired from the Iron Mind, nails. Yeah.
That's cool.
Red was the highest one. I guess I need like a gold band for like a brow belt or something.
Yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, it might as well be because no one's even done it yet under certain
things. People getting very close though. It's crazy to see what people are doing with a gold nail these days.
Yeah, the first guy, episode 1 was with a guy named Derek Graybill, who is under 200 pounds. He might be like 190 or something like that, but just a savagely strong dude. And he's been bending since he was 14 years old. And I feel like he has a pretty good chance at bending that gold nail. I think he just ordered some too.
Have you ever seen a gold nail in person?
I have one. Yeah, I got that back nail, so I have one. I haven't done it.
Yeah, they have one. They send one with the bag of nails.
Yeah. Yep.
It's absolutely ludicrous. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Especially when you compare the red nail to the gold nail, it's just insane.
Oh yeah, and you know what else is a funny comparison is the blue to the red. They kind of like blue. And then your next stop is this red, and that you got to just fill in the gaps with some other stuff. You got to go to the hardware store to keep building. That was when I reached out to a lot of the guys, like, okay, well, I made it to blue, so how do I get to this next one?
Yeah, so I come to think of it now, I ordered some steel from Fat Bastard.
Yeah.
Was what I used to bridge that gap and to
Get
that strength quite a lot. But yeah, you're right, there's big gaps there.
All right, so I know that what came first, jiu-jitsu or weight training for you? I know most of your story, but
jiu-jitsu came first. Yeah.
Okay.
I was training jiu-jitsu from around about 14-15. I had no background in any sort of strength training, and then around about 16-17 years old, I read Dinosaur Training and got into lifting weights from that, with that sort of old school ethos inspired.
Yeah. Okay. And then from the traditional lifting, what was the first thing where you stepped out? Like, if we're talking card tearing, nail bending, stone lifting, all of the things that you've kind of dabbled with, what was that sequence like? What was the first thing where you got a little weird?
Yeah, I think it was nail bending. I think nail bending was the first thing that I sort of, I was training grippers, but grippers are almost like a borderline conventional. They're very, very mainstream. Maybe not to the depth of doing Captain's a Crush or doing Gillingham or doing like any of the certifications, but people see these triangular little torsion spring grippers. They're super commercial mainstream. So, but I had a Captain's a Crush and I got into the grippers a little bit. And then sort of like, I knew as a grappler, the importance of grip. And when I say grip, I mean like everything from your shoulder down to your fingertips, you know, it's like all arm strength in general.
Yes.
I understood the importance of it. And that was sort of hammered home by Dinosaur Training. You know, that's, When I first started lifting weights, so I was lifting weights in a commercial gym, but then as I got through dinosaur training, it's just like, no, you've got to be a garage gorilla. Yeah. It's like, don't train in a gym. You've got to do it yourself. So that's when I started building my home gym, which to begin with was just, all I had was like 90 kilos, so like 200 pounds of weight.
Yeah.
And a big 2.5 inch barbell. So it was all focusing on getting the grip strong. And then that sort of sent me down the grip training. And then the first thing that I really got out to that was really sort of niche is the unbraced bending. And for me, you know, everything I do is to be stronger for grappling. But I did for a while, I did the, okay, my goal is going to be to add weight to the bar. The goal is going to be a 200 kilo squat, or the goal is going to be 150 kilo bench, or whatever it was. But I respect people where that is sustainable long-term. Someone who can be so obsessed with getting the highest squat number on a back squat that they can get, that they will just move the goalposts every time that they reach their goal indefinitely until they're adding 1 kilo every year. And then, mm-hmm. and then they're just, you know, now they're past their prime and now they're just trying not to lose any strength, or they're trying to minimize the amount of loss of strength. I couldn't do that. I got bored. So what I decided to do was focus on achieving a goal, and it could be anything, and make sure that in order to achieve that goal, I would have had to have built strength that would be functional in my sport. So then I got into steel bending a little bit, and saw the Ironmind Red Nail certification, like the sort of the standard, everyone knows, the most famous certification for steel for unbraced bending. And I thought, I'm going to need really strong wrists in order to do that. Strong wrists will be good for grappling. That's going to be my goal.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And then the other stuff came after that. Once I did the bending, and then like the card tearing was something I was like, oh man, I just want to test some cards. And yeah. I got like super into card tearing. And then later on, more recently in the last couple of years, I'm going to lift the Dinny stones was the big goal. And then it was through the Dinny stones that I got interested in historic stone lifting, natural stone lifting.
Very cool. Yeah. You know, what's funny is I saw somebody repost something from Westside the other day that was like basically the sentiment that you just spoke of. Like, if you're training an athlete, don't let the scale drive your be indicative of performance or whatever. The fact being that if you're training an athlete, the only thing that matters is how they perform as an athlete, and the numbers don't really matter all that much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, the only sport where your bench, squat, and deadlift numbers matter is powerlifting. It's the only sport where it matters, you know. It's still very useful to have quantifiable goals. So, you know, I still, even to this day, I make sure that I always have the goal of doing something with a number attached to it, because it gives you focus, it gives you drive. I've gone through training and I've not had any number goals or any training goals. You're just meandering around and it's very unfocused. And I didn't enjoy it. And I definitely didn't get any benefit from it. So, but for example, right now, like as of right this moment, I'm constantly trying to work towards a 200 kilo sandbag squat, which would be 440 pounds. Yeah, I think so. 440 bag squat. That's the only thing that is based in a number. I'm still doing lots of other exercises, and it's just about like perceived rate of exertion for me, or just like working out or getting a pump or whatever else you want to do. But as long as you have like one thing with a number on it, then you can keep on. That's like almost like the skeleton of that you build the rest of your program around. But there was a time where everything was, I want to get this, you know, I'm going to squat because I've never for years not been able to deadlift my back. So like, I'm going to try and get this in the squat, and I'm going to try and get this in the deadlift, in the bench press, and I'm going to try and get this overhead, and that's the goal. And I'm always trying to push those numbers, but I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Did you happen to see that show on History that they were, I don't know if it's running currently or if it wrapped yet, with The Strongest Man in History?
It's so cool.
Yeah. Dude, so those big boys were having trouble with a 400-pound bag. So if you squat a 400-pound bag, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I it's just to try and squat it. And the goal for that is to assist with my natural stone lifting.
Yes.
I don't know. I think with the natural stone lifting, it's got to a point actually where it's separated away from the grappling. And I like it partly because it makes me stronger on the mat.
Yeah.
But actually, I would still want to lift these stones regardless of whether I was grappling or not. So that's like become like a hobby outside of the sport. And it is a benefit. It's an addition, a bonus that it translates over to grappling as well. My big goal for the natural stones right now is to do the Husafell stone, which is 380, not sure what it is in pounds. It's 186 kilos.
Yeah.
I think it's 402 pounds.
Okay.
Is the Husafell. Being able to squat, I definitely can't lift up 200 kilo bag off the ground. It is ridiculous. But I get it onto a box and pick it up off the box and squat with it and work on holding it and maybe even try and walk with it. Will hopefully at some point in the future put me in a good position to go to Iceland and do the Husafell.
Wow, that's cool. So doing all this stuff and basically, take me inside your mind. What motivates you? I know. It kind of takes a crazy kind of person to want to, you know, bend steel, lift stones, you know. Is it just the fact that it's been done by another human, so you feel like you should be able to do it too? Or take me into it.
Yeah, so I think there's different reasons for different things. The steel bending is... I've been doing physical training for about 14 years now, 15 years coming up. And I have a personality that would get bored of just doing bench press. You know, I see some people that I've known for a really long time who bench press, squat and deadlift, and maybe occasionally do overhead press and maybe some pull-ups. And they've just done that every single week for the last 15 years. No. And that is crazy to me. I don't even understand how someone could do that. I got respect for it.
Yeah.
But I would never want to do that. I also believe, I truly believe in the process of diminishing returns as well. The amount of effort you have to put in after doing the same thing over and over again for that amount of time, your reward for the amount of effort you put in is so diminished. So mixing up a lot, not flip-flopping between different programs without any consistency, because you need consistency to build, but not being overly consistent and only taking a very narrow path. I believe that the process of diminishing returns will very much be against you in that regard. So for me, a big part of it is just doing stuff that's different, doing stuff that's like different but still effective. For grappling, when I was still bending a lot, Jesus, the strength and the ability to generate force is, I always keep on wanting to get back into steel bending, short steel bending. The ability to generate force with your upper body, it just becomes unbelievable when you're very, very strong. It's steel bending. When it comes to steel bending, that's one of the reasons. Just like, it's fun, it's awesome to feel the steel bend, but the crossover is just unbelievable. For doing the manhood stones or doing historic stone lifting is a very different reason. You know, for me, it's all about the story. It's about being part of history, being able to, it sounds stupid, but it's a magical thing. It is a spiritual thing. When you go and you lift a stone, you know, out wherever it may be it in nature, be it in someone's front garden or whatever it is, but a stone with hundreds of years of history sometimes, that the other men have journeyed to lift as a test for themselves, go in and it's a pilgrimage of power. It's a pilgrimage of strength. And you are part of that story. And that's something that I really like. I like to do things that can't be taken away from me. My name will be on the Red Nail certification list until long after I'm gone, as long as that thing exists. My name will be in the book for the Dinny Stones, will be in the book for the Inverstone. These are things that cannot be taken from me. Whether I'm old and frail and I can no longer do it, I can say to my grandkids, look, you can't deny it. I did this. You can go online and you can see it. But apart from just that, having something really something that is respected by lots of people, but for the Stones, being part of that history is something that is impossible to understand until you do it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, there's something nice, as far as the bending goes, to have a physical trophy for your efforts. It was straight, now it's bent. there's something so satisfying about that, because if you hit a big deadlift and you're not videotaping every lift you do, there's no real evidence of it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've got I don't know if you keep all your steel as well, but I've got a huge red bucket box that's like the steel graveyard of all of the stuff that I've bent over the years. And one time I had it all hanging up, but then it got too much and it's just in a big box. I need to take out my red nail and some of the more important ones. But still bending. When I was big into it, I loved that stuff. The feeling that you get when I said it already a few times, but when you're putting everything into something and you feel it start to give way, it feels like a real battle against something. It's an inanimate object, but it feels in the same way, and you can get it from a deadlift, you're fighting gravity, but the feeling isn't quite the same. But when you're fighting a piece of steel that is not designed to be moved, is not designed to be manipulated, which makes it cooler, and then people watch it. I've gone into farriers and asked them for a horseshoe. There's laws in the UK. It's very difficult for you to buy a horseshoe from manufacturers without having a farrier license. And they go, we can't sell it to you without your license or whatever. I go, don't worry. You can sell me old ones. It's fine. I'm not going to put them on a horse. I'm going to bend them. And they'll go, what are you talking about? You're going to bend it. And then you can say, give me a horseshoe. Let me show you what I'm going to do with it. And they see their faces as you wrap this thing up and bend it over your leg. It's almost a rebellious act to take a nail, to take a steel pole, to take a horseshoe, and even take a pack of cards, even to lift a rock off the ground. All of these things are almost a rebellious act of defiance to prove that your strength can overcome something that it shouldn't be able to overcome.
It's true. It's very true. Did you mess with any snapping when you were doing bending, or not so much?
So when I was really at my peak of bending, so basically what happened is I got really into bending. I did the Red Nail, and then I did a certification bar for, the Russian steel bending. I don't even know if it's still around. I did a 170 kilo, I think, bar from those guys. And then I developed a shoulder problem. What I actually did was tear my labrum, but I didn't know for a long time. So for a long time, my shoulder was really up and down. I stepped away from bending completely because I bent double over. So it did put pressure on the shoulder as well. Then I finally had it diagnosed and ended up having surgery on it after 9 months, and then had a long road of recovery and didn't bend anything for a really long time. Kind of lost the conditioning for it a little bit. I know doing too much of it, especially when you're not conditioned, can put pressure on the elbows, can put pressure on the wrist, can put pressure on the shoulders. So I kind of stepped away for a little bit, but in my prime, I didn't do any snapping. And it was only when I kind of got tighter with David Horn and he started doing his steel shredder events, where the idea of snapping, I used to snap screws sometimes or snap short nails. I used to do a little bit of that. I remember the one of the craziest sessions I ever did. I tried to snap a horseshoe, and Jesus Christ, man, I bent this thing backwards, back and forth. And I got to the point where I thought it wouldn't snap. Talking to David since then, he'll say like everything will snap. Sometimes it would just take 2 hours to do.
Yeah.
But I was bending by the end of it, because of course it gets softer. I was bending this horseshoe and it felt like it was made of plastic. I was moving it very, very easily, but it was not snapping. And after like 25 minutes, I thought, screw this, this is never going to snap. So I used to play around with it for a little bit, and then I kind of got into brace snapping through David Horn probably a couple of years ago. Still don't do it that much, but one of those things where every once in a while I'll see, I've got like a little box of David Horn steel, and I'll see it and I go, yeah, I'm going to beat myself up today pretty bad, and I'll go for the Horn steel.
Yeah, I'm competing in the steel shredder this is my first time this year, and I love it. I mean, it reminds me so much of grappling, just the endurance, the like having, pushing yourself when your body's telling you not to anymore. And especially all these lying down snaps and stuff like that. The crossover to jiu-jitsu is huge, I feel like.
Yeah, the I think the most recent one is he has a grappling class. I should probably get some steel and give it a go. He has a grappling class where you snap them on your back, I believe. So, you know, the thing is with David, the cool thing about David is that his daughter's, one, he's always been interested in martial arts, but his daughter's big into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. She's like having a lot of success. So he's really got into the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world. So he's definitely got his, you know, obviously he coaches his daughter Lucy. So he's thinking about grappling a lot more. And thinking about getting more into the grappling world and making all of his stuff a little bit more applicable, or creating that connection between what he does in the grip world and what we're doing in the grappling world.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a good amount of crossover. So a few guys I've had on the show, I just had actually about an hour ago before we got on, I spoke to Jan Heller from Germany, Harita, do you know?
Yes.
Yep. He actually gave you a shout out. He said you were one of the first guys he saw bend a nail. And so we had that in common. What's that?
He's smashing me now, though.
Oh, yeah. He's been some big
stuff. Yeah.
But I was surprised and pleased to hear he came from judo and spent some time in submission grappling.
Yep.
A guy, Tom, from New York that I had on last week, he came from wrestling. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Don Cummings.
Yes.
But he was college wrestler. So we're talking.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, a good amount of crossover there. I mean, I definitely think, like, when I do go back to training, I'm going to, you know, be preaching to all of my training partners that they got to start at least some steel snapping, because I feel like that's
with a good workout, yeah.
With the guard work, with working your guard and just the lying snaps, I just can't speak highly enough of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's definitely something in steel bending and steel snapping that appeals to the same sort of personality that martial arts or wrestling or fighting appeals to as well. The steel snapping, especially the long bar stuff, the application for grapplers is just, it really does. I remember a couple of months ago, I was like, 2.5 months into no grappling, and I thought I just need to do a steel snap. And like 15 minutes later, I was like, okay, I feel like they didn't fight back. You know, they couldn't submit me, but they definitely made me work for the submission there. And I felt the closest that I had got to feeling like I'd gone a round or two on the mats for sure.
Yeah, I believe I think he said he's either affiliated with you or one of your students, Dan Dring.
Yep.
He's in second place in the grapplers division, snapping.
Yeah, he's a student. He's affiliated. His gym is affiliated to me. So
okay.
His instructor is graded under me, and he's graded under me as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
He did both bars in like 3 minutes and 20 seconds or something
he's
like that.
Big strong lad. Big strong lad.
Okay. I couldn't really tell from the videos how big he was, but goddamn, that's fast.
Yeah. I need to give it a go. I need to get some over. And then if I do really badly, I'll just not tell anyone I've done it.
Now turn it in. Yeah. Yeah. So back when you were bending and you were chasing the red nail, was it just that you were bending to get better at bending? I have mixed results or mixed answers when I ask this. Were you doing strength exercises with the intent to become stronger for bending, or were you just bending in sequence to achieve that goal?
I was using bending as an accessory, as I would do today as well, as accessory for the rest of my training. I wasn't purely bending, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's there's almost nothing better for the grip and the wrist and maybe, you know, the arms in general than bending, but there's still the rest of your body that you need to train. So I wasn't solely training for bending, but I was definitely doing exercises outside of bending to try and strengthen myself, try and work the chest more, because with the crush, it's a big thing. Definitely doing a lot of levering work with sledgehammers and stuff like that to work that deviation in the wrist. You know, even doing stuff to promote the flexibility needed to get into a good double overhand position. A really good one. I can't even remember who showed me this. I apologize if someone did show me this and I can't remember who they are. But taking a wrapped bar and with a resistance band attached to a low level, you know, attached to the floor or whatever, and rowing into your double, you know, to practice and get that mobility for getting into the position. Obviously, nothing beats bending, but you can try and overload it just like anything else. If you want to have a really massive squat, well, you've got to squat, but you're going to do other exercises, be it good mornings or court, you know, leg press or whatever. So I did a few other exercises to help me train for the red nail, but nothing beats bending, obviously.
Yeah, and sorry, a little hiccup in the thing there. As far as mobility, I'm noticing just from many years of playing butterfly guard and things like that, as much as I want to have good posture, my posture comes in, you know, from like keeping our elbows in and everything. So I'm finding that getting my, even though I'm having trouble accessing some of the strength that I do possess because of mobility issues from, I think, years of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why jiu-jitsu athletes need to do some sort of accessory training outside of jiu-jitsu to combat some of the muscular imbalances that you will develop. Yep. I believe this to be true in essentially every single sport because there will be ways. I don't know of any sport that you do every single movement that the human body can do. And if there's a sport that misses out something, doing a lot of that sport, training often, or training for many years, or a combination of the two, will create muscular imbalances. You'll be extra strong in the positions that your sport thrives on, and you'll be very weak in the positions that you don't come across in the sport. So it's one of the reasons why grip training is so important. When people think grip training for jiu-jitsu, they think I'm going to get my grip stronger for jiu-jitsu. Well, that's one part of it. But that's not the important part of it. The important part of grip training for jiu-jitsu is to work your grip in ways that you don't get from jiu-jitsu. Because that's the reason why so many jiu-jitsu guys get a tennis elbow or golfer's elbow. It's because they have imbalances because they're just doing this all the time and they're not working any other angles or extents or whatever. So just like if you're playing guard all the time and you're internally rotating the shoulders, you need to be doing pulling exercises so you're going into a more neutral position, and that's going to be better for you in general. It's going to open up range for you to be strong in many different angles. So it's nothing to do with grip, nothing to do with mobility. It's almost a health thing. Mm-hmm. Mobility is part of the health. Obviously, that's going to, if you have the mobility, you're going to be able to do what you want to do for bending as well. You should definitely be even just doing face balls. You can do it like, one day I'll have a gym and there'll just be a rubber band hanging from somewhere. And at the end of the session, you just do 100 face pulls and just work those muscles and feel those muscles working and balance out all of the stuff that you're doing from here.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. So what does your training look like right now as far as days a week? Are you rolling these days? And
yeah, so,
what are you doing for double lifting? That's okay.
Yeah, so I'm rolling 3 days a week at the moment, just in like complying to sort of all of the guidances, the safety guidances that the various organizations in the UK have put out. I am, so just in a small bubble, there's four of us. So I'm not training maybe as many days, but I'm getting some really good training. All the people that I'm training with are black belts, and we're training hard. We're doing lots of rounds. I'm not having to worry about teaching, which I've not, you know, I've been teaching for 12 years. I was teaching full time for almost 5 years. So without having to do any of that, really managing to focus on myself a lot more and getting very high quality rolling in, opposed to sometimes, you know, usually when I used to teach, I'd love it, don't get me wrong, but I'd roll with a black belt, a brown belt, a blue belt, a white belt. You know, you're getting a big variation, whereas now I'm getting all my rounds in with a black belt. So it was really good.
Great.
Before I was rolling, I took like almost 4 months off over the, you know, the peak of the virus lockdown. And I was lifting, because I wasn't rolling at all, I was lifting 5 or 6 days a week, which I actually really enjoyed. It doesn't replace grappling, but it is, it was nice to be able to stretch out everything that I needed to do over a week into many sessions instead of trying to put it in just a couple of sessions. Now I'm back rolling. I'm lifting twice a week, pretty much. So it's not as much as I'd like to, but the moment anyway, like I had a week where I didn't take 2 days rest and I felt it, and I'm not yet brave enough to lift and roll on the same day. So I like to keep myself fresh for rolling. I do think that, you know, maybe it's different for people when they're younger, when you're in your early 20s or in your teens. It's definitely different for some of the top grapplers who are using help to be able to recover from the training. You know, you look at some of these athletes and you look at their crazy training schedule, and they're rolling a hard 2 hour rolling three times a day.
Yeah.
That's not natural. You can't do that. So anyway, unfortunately, I don't have that help. So I don't do that. I prefer to be able to roll with high intensity and feel good and feel strong when I'm doing my rounds. So yeah, at the moment, it's pretty much 3 times a week rolling and 2 times a week lifting.
All right. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. That's what I'm gonna have. We haven't gone back to training yet here in New York, so it's going to be interesting to try to balance the two, because right now I'm just full tilt on everything strength.
Yeah. I did that for like 3 months.
Yeah.
Just over 3 months, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So at the end of the show, I do a thing called the medley, which is a rapid fire series of questions.
Okay, I'm super excited. I've never done more podcasts than over this lockdown period. I think you're like maybe my 7th or 8th one that I've done in the last couple of months. We haven't had a rapid fire yet, so like genuinely excited for this.
All right.
I'm braced and everything ready to smash this up.
Favorite thing to bend?
Horseshoes.
Oh. Hardest thing to bend for you?
Horseshoes. I've had some big horseshoes. When a horseshoe doesn't want to move, it really doesn't want to move.
Yeah,
I'd say that. I tell you what though, I emotionally the hardest, David Horn. I had a training. I know this isn't a rapid.
That's okay. Off,
but I'll tell you the story anyway. Last time I trained with David Horn, we were doing some bending, we were doing some snapping. He wanted me to snap a bolt, and he gave me this bolt, and I could not budge this thing. And, you know, having David watching me, I could, even though he was very kind about it, I could feel the disappointment radiating from him as I kind of felt myself wither away physically and emotionally. So physically hard, maybe not, but emotionally hard, that was probably the worst.
All right, back when you were bending, strongest bending style for you?
Double overhand for sure.
All right. Weakest style?
I really suck at the, well, these days I really suck at the any stuff on the legs, man, it's so painful. The people bending stuff around their legs, like the super long bar, and they slide it through the leg and they bend it. Jesus Christ, or even the crush on the inside. So painful. I don't understand how people do that.
Yeah, I was definitely trying to, once I got the horseshoe open and then you finish it over your leg, I was in some excruciating pain doing that thing.
Back in the day when I was doing it loads, my leg would just harden, but nowadays it's just soft.
All right, here's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Something outside of strength sports or grappling that you enjoy.
Chess.
All right, cool. All right, you might have just touched on it, but what's the one bend that got away? Was it that bullet at Horns or?
The one bend that got away. yeah, probably. I don't know. There was one on Steel Shredder 1, I think it was, which was a snapping event, and like a mid-range bar snapping event, and it was a 20-minute limit, and I put up one. And it was okay. And I went for a heavier one, which would have put me like maybe top five. And I did it in like 21 minutes or something like that. I just, you know, I got the snap, but it was just a little bit out of regulation time. I didn't care.
Yeah.
That was probably it. All
right. I'm interested in this one too. Who's the strongest person you know?
Probably David Horn. That guy, I've just seen him do some unbelievable stuff. Yeah. David's an absolute beast, and at his age as well, the guy's in his 50s and just like insanely strong. never ceases to impress me, and actually very mobile as well. Last time I trained with him, we were doing like knee jumps. We were squatting to a 4-inch block on the ground. We were goblet squatting. So yeah, just a super inspirational guy and an absolute unit as well.
Yeah, I saw him with the inch dumbbell replica or something doing some really deep squats. It was like,
yeah, it's crazy. Like, I have a really deep squat. Like, my squat mobility is one of the best of anyone that I've ever met, and I was just getting it. So for David, as a big guy and a guy as mature in age as he is, to be hitting that comfortably was super impressive.
That's awesome. How about the best piece of advice you were ever given? It could be about sports, lifting, or life in general.
I have no idea. The best bit of advice that I was ever given. I almost feel like I've been given too much good advice to think of one thing. I have no idea, man. That's a really hard one because I'm just, Yeah, I don't know. I've been given a lot of advice, man. I couldn't remember who said it or what precisely they said. I just try and absorb it all and send it in there. And then like 10 years later, I'll tell someone else and I'll think that I'm a genius for making it up. But someone else told me that like 15 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. All right. How about the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending nails or in your case, lifting stones?
Yeah, I think the stone one is like even weirder for people.
Yeah.
Because you travel to lift a stone.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to them. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to make stones and strangles to sort of explain what was going on. Cause I do something. So for example, when I went to Australia on holiday and I was seeking wherever I went, I was finding strongman gyms that had natural stones because as soon as I came back from Australia, I was going on my trip and ending up in Scotland to lift all the manhood stones. So I had to keep my training in. And someone would be like, where have you been today? And I said, well, I drove for an hour and a half out of my way to find a gym specifically because they had stones. And they're like, why? Because I'm going back to Scotland when I get home to lift this special stone. And they're like, what are you talking about, a special stone? So they definitely looked at me like I was completely crazy, which may or may not be true.
Awesome. All right, that concludes the medley. You made it through. Congratulations. Yeah. All right, in closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
It's got to be David, man. You're going to get a chat with David for sure. Good luck convincing him. I think he might be a little bit more open to the idea than he's been in the past. But when I first spoke to David, I went up and met him many years ago. And I just started the podcast probably 3 years ago. And I mentioned I'd love to get him on the podcast. He said no. And what he said was, I've already done one. He said he's done a podcast now. He doesn't need to do any other ones. So it took me a couple of years to befriend him and convince him to sit down and have a chat. And that was just one of my favorite episodes for sure.
Mine too.
I think the fact that you're doing a podcast that is, you know, still bending is and still snapping is something that's very close to his heart. So I think that you might be in with a shot because you have a podcast dedicated to still snapping, still bending or whatever. So yeah, David's an awesome guy. I'll tell you what, to answer one of those earlier questions, the amount of, maybe not advice, but the amount of wisdom that I absorb from that man every time I'm in his presence is unbelievable. The guy is just, you know, you could take, I'd go to his house because I have an affiliate gym very nearby, and okay. I'd always plan an extra day to go and spend the day with David. Lucky enough to do that, and we do a bit of training. The training would be super relaxed. Like, we'd come in, we'd have a cup of tea, we'd chat for hours, we'd go out, we'd lift for a little bit, we'd come in, we'd have some lunch, we'd go back out, we'd lift for a bit more, we'd come in, we'd chat, you know, and we talk for all day long, and the amount of wisdom and knowledge that that man has is just inconceivable on so many topics as well. It's not just what shocked me with David. So much knowledge in all things strength, obviously grip. People think just grip. It's grip, it's strongman, it's tug of war, it's arm wrestling, it's strength in general, it's fitness in general. But then he is so knowledgeable in martial arts, in so many different martial arts, be it MMA or jiu-jitsu, self-defense, different and stuff like that. His book collection is the greatest book collection I've ever seen. He was an antiques dealer at one point before he was working... doing what he's doing now. So he's got like so much knowledge there as well. Just an absolute, I don't understand how his brain can contain so much information.
Oh yeah. That episode, I listened to it just in headphones the first time. And then I was like, I got to watch this one too. So then I watched it and then I've listened to it again. I've gone back to that one many times. There's just so much in there. And also every time you've had Andrew Marshall on, I've enjoyed those episodes quite a lot. I have a dear friend who we met in 2008 sitting outside our first jiu-jitsu academy. And he's a bit older than me. He's in his mid-50s, but he's struggled from Crohn's his entire life severely. Wow. So I sent him over each episode with Andrew, and he enjoyed those quite a lot. But
that's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, so I love those episodes, and just seeing or witnessing Andy's, whatever, from my perspective, the first episode, he was just fired up about lifting heavy and everything, and then he...
Yeah, no, we both were, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and then his life took him in a different direction, and then just hearing, he has a ton of wisdom too, I really...
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you know, going back, Andy, I've been very fortunate to have Andy a part of my life for many, many years now. And he's always been, you know, giving me the best counsel and always imparted a lot of wisdom. You know, we separated our ways when sort of the gym that he ran shut down. And because we would see each other pretty much every day for maybe 5 or 6 years, every single day, because he was a co-owner of the gym that I trained at, the jiu-jitsu gym that I trained at. So I'd go to train every day and he would be there. I got into the strength conditioning. I'd see him every day. We'd hang out every day. We'd train. First, he was a coach. Then he was a training partner. So for the first 6 or 7 years, all of the wisdom, all of the knowledge that I have in strength and conditioning came from him. He moved away and we saw each other less, and I was able to sort of go out on my own and learn a bit myself. But a huge amount of the knowledge that I have comes directly from Andy. So he's definitely a very cool guy and a very knowledgeable coach as well.
For sure. Out of curiosity and to keep it on topic, did he ever do any bending or snapping to your knowledge?
Yeah, we used to train a little, you know, back in the day when we had Villain Strength, when that was when I was at peak bending. You know, I remember the last session that I did before I did the Red Nail was a Villain. Andy came with me when I did the Red Nail, my video of me doing the Red Nail, Andy was filming it. So we used to mess around with it, because I used to have all of the stuff there. I used to have all of my kit there. We train and then we eat and then we'd go, okay, well, let's try and bend this or let's snap this. So he used to get a little bit of training in with me on that. Never got super into it, but yeah, we used to mess around with that stuff all the time.
Nice. All right. How about, where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
Okay, so I've got this one down already because I do this at the end of my podcast anyway. But if you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram's the best place. It's Raspberry_8. I do have a Facebook page. I don't use it very much, but I'm using it at the moment, which is Raspberry8. Or you can check me out on just my normal Facebook page, Daniel Strauss. Also on Twitter, Raspberry_8, but I don't really use it that much. I do have a website, which is back up now, which is Raspberry8.com. Nice. And YouTube channel is youtube.com/Raspberry Ape. Yeah, that's it. You can find me. If you type in Raspberry Ape, it will take you to me every single time.
Yeah, and everybody should check out Stones and Strangles. Two episodes out so far?
Yeah, second episode dropped today, and I'm dropping two episodes a day because I'm impatient. So there's 8 episodes, so Tuesdays and Fridays the episodes are coming out.
Nice. And you're doing some gear. I don't know. Are you currently doing gear review on there? Because when I watched the Stones and Strangles, the next video that came up was a gear review, which was cool.
I think I might have done one. I'm not sure if it's on my YouTube channel though. So I've been planning on, because I've got so much stuff. I've been planning on doing training reviews on gear for so long. So I'm going to be recording. I'm going to do a little tour of the gym. And then I'm going to start reviewing some of the equipment that I have. So, yeah, hopefully in the next, you can hold me to this at some point. But hopefully in the next couple of months after Stones and Strangles is all out, then I will start regularly putting out some information about, because I've got so much equipment, it's almost a waste not to review it and stick it out there.
Yeah, the one I saw was called like the Gripito or something.
Oh,
like
yeah. I think so. Yeah, was that on my page or was it on their page?
I think it was your page.
It might have been on my page. I think you're right, actually. Yeah, I did do a review for the Gripito. Cool bit of kit, actually. But yeah, I want to do more. I definitely want to do more. So hopefully, hopefully we'll be seeing that soon.
All right. And lastly, any events, brands, or gear that you want to shout out?
Any events? No, not too much at the moment. You can always buy Raspberry Ape gear at raspberryape.com. I'm also sponsored by Cerberus Strength. I'm not sure if my discount code works in the American store, but if you're in the UK, then you can get 10% off with code APE10. And that's where I get all of my sandbags from, which is like a huge part of my training. And I don't just promote them because they sponsor me. I've been using their stuff for about 7 years before they even started sponsoring me. So I just managed to, I thought I keep on buying so much of their stuff, it's going to be easier if I manage to get them as a sponsor. And then the universe made it happen. But they've got the best sandbags out there. They do have an American store as well, but I'm not sure if the code works on the American store. Give it a go.
Nice. All right, man. So that's a wrap. I thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, before we started recording, you were the spark to kind of start me on this whole strength path, and I don't think I'll ever stop. So thanks again.
No, that's amazing, man. I said beforehand, hearing that really means a lot to me and gives me motivation to continue putting information out there and keep on bending shit and lifting shit and tearing stuff, and to see other people that I've put on that same path, which I think is a pretty cool path, is awesome to see. So I appreciate
that. Definitely. Thanks, man. I'll be in touch when I start pestering you about stones.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. You've got a couple out in the States, some good stones out there.
Oh yeah.
Thanks for having me on, man. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Which ones are in the States?
Oh man, there's places all over the place. There's places all over. They're not quite, you don't have anything in America with much history, you know, no offense, but
yeah.
But you do have some lifting stones out there, so.
Oh, cool.
You've got everything in America, man.
Yeah. Hopefully it lasts.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, there's definitely stuff out there, so you can check it out.
Cool. All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Catch you soon, yeah?
Thanks, bro.